We're actually a little bit behind today by rights. We got Memtrek, but we only got yesterday as far as the mission at the bottom of Memtrek and Moralo. So we'll start there and we'll eventually catch up. That's the show. Mishnah says, if a potter brings in his pot into a chotzer, into somebody's chotzer, without permission, the shovra behemoth balabayis and the balabos's animal broke the pot, he's potter because the guy didn't have rishus to bring it in, and the balabos didn't accept any achrayus for the pot. And what happens if the animal gets injured by the pot? It tripped on him, for example, while there is chayiv, then the potter is going to be chayiv. This is somebody's chotzer. But if he brought him in with the permission of the bala chotzer, then the owner of the chotzer is chayiv for the damage to the pot, and obviously potter for his animal damaging that. Or he's chayiv for the potter for the other guy is potter for the pot having damaged the animal. Yeah. A similar case. What if somebody instead of pot, somebody brings in his payrus into somebody's chotzer without rishus? And the balabas's animal eats them. Potter again. The balabas's potter. And if it got injured by them, what we mean by injured by them, we'll talk about in the Gemara. There could be two possibilities. It could be that it slipped on them and broke a leg or something, or it could be that it ate them and got a stomach ache.
Why don't we combine these both?
Let's finish the Mishnah, and then I'll tell you what Tosfos says, why we need all three cases. There's going to be a third case yet, too. So, if it gets injured by them, again, either can mean it slipped on them or it can mean that it ate from them and got a stomach ache, we'll discuss in the Gemara. Bala Peres Chayev, and the owner of the Peres Chayev, Vim Hichnis Birushus, but again, if you brought him in with permission, Bala Chotzer Chayev, and the owner of the Chotzer is Chayev for any damage to the Peres. And a third case, Hichnis Shur to the Chatzah Bala Bayas Shalab Birushus, somebody brings in Shur into a person's Chotzer without Rishus, but Nog Chashur to Bala Bayas, and Bala Bayas' own ox gores it. Or the balabas dog bites the shur. Potter. Again, the balabas is potter. Same idea. Noga, who shur shabalabayas, chayef. Conversely, if this foreign shur that was brought in without permission goes and gores the balabas is shur, he's going to be chayef. Okay, so you're asking why do we need all these separate cases? So Tosfos says because. Tam and Mord actually, we will discuss the possibility in the Gemara that maybe the third case, as far as the Shur, maybe we'll talk about the possibility that part may be according to Reb Tirfen, because Reb Tirfen, we looked before, says there's a difference with Tam and Mord versus whether it's in the Chassal and Nizek or not. So we'll get to that later on, Memphis. But Tosfos, for the meanwhile, points out that pots are something that are easily broken. So if you come in with permission, okay, that explains why the balabas is chayev. It's very easy for them to get accidentally broken with his animal walking around. Peiros, maybe not. Maybe
it's
peiros. Peiros, yeah. That's what pots were normally made out of in those days, earlier than we are. So then you would assume, okay, pots, you would say when he says, come in, even if he didn't explicitly say, I'll walk through pots for you, we would assume that that's included because it's easy for them to break with the animal walking around. Peiros, maybe not necessarily. So you need to mention that. And then you also, okay, payers at least are somewhat, you know, they're relatively speaking, maybe not as much as possible. Still, it's relatively easy for them to get damaged by an animal eating from them or whatever, whereas another behemoth, not necessarily, it's not that usual that one behemoth will gore the other. So therefore, there's sort of an ascending order, lo zu af zu, not only in this case, but even in this case.
We could have consolidated. You could say, there. Peiros.
That's the thing. Tosfos is saying that it's going in a loizu akzu kind of way, which is a common kind of thing for the Mishnayos to do. It'll start with a more obvious case and then go to the less obvious one. Also, the Shittim Kubetis points out, we're going to learn in the Gemara, we're going to learn the Machlokas of Rebbe and the Chachamim about what exactly it means. When you allow somebody into your chotzer, what kind of achrayus are you accepting on yourself? Given that discussion that we're going to have, then even the first case, as far as the pot, is important.
Is relevant.
Is relevant to that machlokas, as we shall see. Continue the Mishnah. Actually, the moment of the machlokas at the end of our Mishnah, the Gemara is going to expand on it. Continue the Mishnah. Nofel abode behivish meima. What about another case? This ox that came into the chotzer, if it fell into a pit in the chotzer, and a pit usually is made to hold water, so it fell in there and stunk up the water. later on we'll discuss in the Gemara in what way. There's various
kinds of water. Dried the water?
No, it fell in and stunk up the water. Now the water is not usable anymore.
Hivish
means he stunk it up or made it disgusting or whatever, which there's a few possibilities, right? You could have the animal itself was dirty when it fell in and mud all over it, let's say. You could have it died in there and then the carcass of it stunk up the water or, you know, whatever. There can be various possibilities, which we'll talk about later on when we test in a bit. So Chayev, so the owner of the shor is Chayev. And what if, let's take a further case. What if the Balam Bas is the Balam Bas, the owner of the chaser, and therefore the owner of the burr? If his father or his son was down there in the burr, and the shur fell on him and killed him, Mishalam as a kofer, the owner of the shur is going to have to pay kofer, as we'll discuss in the Gemara.
Yeah.
No, obviously only if it's a mu'ad. We'll get to that in the Gemara. Again, if he brought... we'll discuss in the Gemara. The muad that it habitually goes near, that it tried to fall in. We'll see in the Gemara what exactly it's muad for. But wait. Okay. Now again, if the owner of the shur brought it in with permission of the chaser, bala chaser chayev, then again the owner of the chaser is going to be chayev for any damage that's caused it. Yeah. Rebbe, but cool and ain't chayev. Rebbe says no. In none of these cases, not with the pot, not with the fruit, not with the behemoth, with the shus. Still, he's not chayev. Actually, kabbal all of lishma, balabayis lishma, I'm going to say. Unless the balabas says, I will accept on myself that I'll watch your pots or your paris or what have you, then you can't hold him responsible for anything that happens today.
So if he says nothing, he's not.
So if he says nothing, according to Rebbe, he wouldn't be responsible, right? Okay.
He has permission to come in.
Right. Okay, so the Gemara starts up. Time of Shalobir Rishus. What are we saying? That, let's say in the case of the pot, a similar thing applies to the other two cases, we're saying, why is the owner of the pot chayev for anything that happens to the animal? If the balabas's animal trips over the pots or something, we're saying only because he came in Shalobir Rishus. Habir Rishus, but that would imply that if he did come in with permission, we're saying, okay, the Mishnah had spelled out that the Bala Chatzar is Chayev, meaning for anything that happens to the pot. But the implication is also that the Kader, the potter, is not going to be Chayev for what happened to the animal. The fact that the animal took over his pot. It sounds like since he came in with permission, he'll be potter for that. V'loyam rinin kabuli kibol Bala Chatzar is Nitzidus Dibhem to the Bala Chatzar. Now, that means we do not say that when he came in with Rishus, that when he came in with Rishus, then that means he implicitly accepted on himself that I will be careful, that I'm bringing in my pot with your Rishus, but implicitly that I'll be careful that I won't allow your animal near them, that it might trip over them.
Hold on. He has to say that.
No, but the implication is that we don't, because he didn't say, I'm accepting responsibility, I'll make sure that your animal doesn't get injured by my pot. Therefore, he's potter. Mani Rebbe. Now, that part of the Mishnah then seems to go like Rebbe. Which he said at the end of the Mishnah, that unless you explicitly say, I'm accepting responsibility, you're not accepting responsibility. Fine. The problem with that is, Ema Sefer, but look then at the next part of the Mishnah, which continues in Hichnis Birushus, that if he did bring it in with permission, then the owner of the chaser is chayev. Now, again, when he brought it in with rishus, it just means he knocked on the door. The bala chaser told him, come on in. He didn't specifically say, I'm going to watch your pots for you. And yet we're saying he's chayev. Achtan the Rabbanan. That part now seems to be according to the Rabbanan. Within the ratio, within the case of the pot, right, you have two cases. One where he brings it in Shaloi Birushus, we're saying that if the animal gets injured, the Balak Deris is Chayev. And the other part, which said if you brought it in Birushus and the animal breaks the pot, the Balak Chatzar is going to be Chayev for the pot. Now, again, when he brings it in Shaloi Birushus, okay, we're saying he's Chayev for any injury to the animal. But if he brought it in Birushus, the implication is that the implication is he will be potter for the animal getting injured by the pot. Because he didn't say, I'm bringing in my pots, but I will take responsibility and make sure your animal doesn't get injured by the people.
He could say the fact that it was not Bereshus, with or without saying it.
But the implication, by saying that he's chayev for the damages to the animal, Shaloi Bereshus, implies that if it was Bereshus, he'll be potter for the damages to the animal, which is
even
important.
If he didn't express anything.
Because he didn't express anything. And that's according to Debbie. Because according to Rebbe, he would have actually had to say, when he's coming in, thank you for letting me bring in my pot. I'll make sure that your animal doesn't get injured by any of the pieces. And otherwise, he'd be positive. But the next part of the Mishnah, which talks about again with the pot, that says if he brought it in, be assured the Baal Chatzar is chayiv, and it doesn't say anything that the Baal Chatzar is saying, you can bring in your pot, I'll make sure my animal doesn't damage them. Asan l'rabbanan, and that part seems to go according to the rabbanan. Dami b'stam anami kabuli kabula lena terusa. They say that even b'stam, if you just say, come on in, without saying anything explicit, it amounts to saying that I will make sure your pots don't get damaged. That's the rabbanan. And the two, and then we continue in the Mishnah, the last words of the Mishnah, Rebbe Yom b'kulan eni chayi akshay kabula l'balabayis lishmer, that gives us Rebbe's opinion. So what do you have? Reisha v'sefer Rebbe v'siyot v'rabbanan. What do you have? A hybrid Mishnah over here. The first part is according to Rebbe, then it switches over according to the opinion of the Rabbanan, and then goes back to Rebbe. That's not how Mishnayos are usually usually structured. Yeah. Okay. Amar Rabbanan. Amar Rabbeira. Tavra. Yes. As a matter of fact, it's a stira. Tavra literally means a break. As we talked about before, there's various explanations what it means. Either he means stira, the first and the second parts of the Mishnah like break against each other, like there's no way to enter it all according to one Tana. There's a shvira. Tavra is the equivalent of shvira in Hebrew. Yeah. A lot of times the shin in Hebrew changes to a top and Aramaic. Yeah. There's an explanation. I think Tosfos brings it somewhere that tavra is a lashon of shvur. Whatever. The point is, he's saying that it's irreconcilable. Misha shanazu lo shanazu. Yeah. You have to say that. You have to say that there's a machlok. You have to say that within the opinion of the rabbanon, there must be a stira. There must be two different opinions. The Tana, in other words, we would say the Tana started off with the Tana of the first words of the Mishnah was under the followed the assumption that Rebbe and the Chachamim are not in fact arguing. The opinion that we attribute at the end of the Mishnah to Rebbe that everybody agrees to that. Therefore, unless you explicitly say anything, you're not chayav. Then the Mishnah continues, according to another Tana, who says, there is, as a matter of fact, there is a machlokes. And he goes and presents the machlokes. Rava amakula rabbanan. He, Rava, says you don't need that necessarily. You could say the whole Mishnah does go according to the rabbanan, except obviously the last line, which is according to Rebbe. Because, over the shus, because what it is like this. When the Paro came in, over the shus, Shmira,
the first one,
In either case, when we're saying, the Mishnah started off with the case where it comes in Shaloi Bereshus, and we were deducing from it what would happen if it was Bereshus. Afterwards, the Mishnah continues with what happens Bereshus in terms of Baal HaChatzar being high. So, the difference is like this. Bereshus, when the guy comes in Bereshus, Shmiras Kedavis Kibbalah Baal HaChatzar. So, it means that the owner of the Chatzar accepted on himself the guarding of the pot. The Afilu Nishburu Beruach. Even if they get damaged by the wind, never mind if they get damaged by his shur. Let's say the wind blows on the chatzar and breaks them. Yeah. So because effectively, in other words, when he says come on in, it amounts to saying, which is what the Rabbanan are saying, that come in implies and I'll watch them for you. That's what the Rabbanan hold. The thing is like this. There's two different ways of understanding what the Gemara is answering. Because the question, fine, we understand why the Baal HaChatzar is chayav. The real question was we were discussing why is the Baal HaKederes chatzar, if he came in Bereshus, from the animal getting damaged by it. So there's two different ways of looking at it. Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz versus the implication of what Rashi says. Let me see if I remember correctly. So Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz explains that what the Gemara is implying is that by the Baal HaChatzar saying, I'm accepting on myself responsibility for your pot, implicitly he's also saying, and I'm pottering you from any responsibility for anything. Therefore, my animal gets damaged by your pot, you're not going to be fired. He didn't say it out explicitly, but that's the implication of what Rava is saying.
Does that mean, even if it's an unreasonable type of damage, I mean, as you said, let's say that there's a storm that comes and destroys everything.
No, if it was something like that, unexpected, then no, he wouldn't. Yeah.
Within a reasonable amount,
yeah. So that's Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz's way of explaining it, is that by saying that I'm Makabel Shmira, it amounts to saying that I'm taking it all from you. I'm pottering you from it. The implication from Rashi seems to be a little bit different, which is that the owner of the chaser implicitly by saying, come on in, is saying, like Rava is saying, I'm accepting responsibility. However, the Baal HaKederes didn't say anything. He just brought in his pot. You can't assume that he accepted responsibility for anything. Therefore, he's potter for the animal getting damaged by the fact
that he walks in. Is
no, but that's not enough because the balachot are telling him, come on in. Fine.
That's enough. That's an acceptance.
It means that he accepted. It means fine. I'm bringing in my pot. Doesn't mean that I'm by doing that. Doesn't mean that this is how Rashi is learning. Apparently, that by bringing in his pot is not necessarily accepting any responsibility for the animal getting damaged by the pot. The balachotah, on the contrary, by saying, come on in, is implicitly saying, come on in, implies the enterloch, and I will guard them for you. There's two different ways of looking.
Well, you can say the balachotah, by saying coming in, accepts responsibility, but you could say it just the same way. At the same time, the guy who comes in, by coming in after the balachotah accepts him, shared that responsibility.
But not necessarily, because he didn't even say anything. At least if you say something, at least if you say, come on in, then it implies. Okay, again, you have the other explanation. It says, I've been impaired, except by the balabas saying, come on in, implying, and I'll watch your thing. Also, the implication of it is further, and you're not going to be silent. Because a moment I'm multiple sophic is, if you have a sophic independent of their claims, here it really depends what they mean. It really depends on what they mean. Okay, well, yeah, but besides, the halakha is not like simple anyway.
No, I understand.
Okay, Mishnah continued. Hichnis peros of a chatzah balabais. We said the second case of the Mishnah was if you brought in peros, and we said that if you brought him in shaloi b'rashus and the owner, the chatzah's owner's animal got injured by them. So we said the owner of the peros is chayim. What do we mean by injured? That's only true if the animals are slipped on them. But if the animal ate them, then the owner of the peiros is going to be potter. My time, because he can say that the animal didn't have to eat them. I brought the peiros in. Fine, it's true. I didn't have your permission. The animal didn't have to eat them. Therefore, at best, you can consider maybe I was a grub. Omer of Sheshis, sort of Sheshis says an interesting expression. He uses this expression in a few places in Shas. Amina, I must say, Tinayim b'shachet Zav amalah hashmaita. It must be that Rav said this when he was about to fall asleep. In other words, he's saying this can't possibly be right. The Chavis Yer has an interesting verse on this. It sounds like a very disrespectful thing to say about Rav. Actually, he says it's meant as an expression of respect. Rav Sheshis is saying, I can't possibly believe that Rav would have said something like that, doesn't make sense, when he was fully awake, when he was fully alert. It must be when he was close to falling, and even Nayim B'Shachet, he says, Nayim B'Shachet implies you fall in the sleep, as opposed to Shachet B'Nayim would imply, like he said it, when he's starting to wake up. Okay, but then as soon as you're fully awake, you realize your mistake. Whereas if Nayim B'Shachet, if you're falling asleep, you may never have a chance to realize it afterwards because you fall asleep. So he's saying that it doesn't seem to follow because we have a braisa that contradicts it. But still, the only way Rav could possibly have said such a thing is if he was almost falling asleep and wasn't thinking clearly. Why? Titania, because we learn in a braisa. If somebody puts poison in front of somebody else's animal, so he's potter from human din, meaning the owner of the animal which ate poison and died can't take him to base, can't collect anything from him in base din. But he's chayiv in the shemayim, he's chayiv in the Eved's judgment. Implied.
Because
he put poison. Because it's grama, basically. It's a case of grama. But the case of grama, he didn't directly feed the poison to the animal. The point is, Rav Sheshis says, the implication is, samamovet to the loyavida da'ocha. Okay, why is the Braisa saying he's potter? Because he put poison, which is not something that an animal would normally eat. Therefore, he has the ability to say, if he's brought to Beis Din, fine. But you can't, an animal wouldn't normally eat this stuff anyway.
Put it in the meat.
That's a different way. But on the face of it, if you put down peiros, which is the case of our Mishnah, where an animal normally will eat peiros, the implication would seem to be that you're chayav b'dinei adam as well. Not like Rav says. You can't say, okay. That's the question. Why? According to what you, Rav, are saying, why should we chayav? The Braisa shouldn't have mentioned samamavet. The Braisa should have mentioned peiros. Amri, so they answered, Huatim dafila peiros nami potim dinonim. Not necessarily, because you could say the braisa means that whatever you put there, whether it was actual poison or whether it was peiros, you'd still either way be potim dinonim. In other words, if it overate from the peiros, let's say, and got a stomachache, or it was peiros that were better, that were bad for it, or whatever. The hawk mashmalon, the chiddush of the braisa is faked. Even when it comes to actual poison, which is not even something that an animal normally eats, even then, even in that case, you can't, in other words, not the focus of the braisa is not that potum dinadam. That would be the case whether it was sama mavis or peiros. The chiddush is, if you put peiros there and it ate them and got a stomachache, of course you're chayav b'dinishamayim. You put peiros over there that you knew the animal was going to be attracted to. You put some of us over there. There's no reason to think, maybe you would say, no reason necessarily to think the animal would be attracted to it. Nevertheless, you hide the dinishamayim for putting some poison. So you can't necessarily prove from this braisa against Ra.
What's the parallel with Rav?
That's the point. Rav was saying in our Mishnah that you put down Peiros and the guy's chotzer and the animal ate it. The owner of the Peiros would be chotzer because Havi Moshe L'Toichol. If we understand the Braisa that way, that it's not really distinguishing between Sama Mavis and Peiros, that either way, you put them in the Dodd and Chayav Shemayim, then it amounts to the same thing as what Rav said. Okay, the Iboy same, or another possibility, you could answer Sama Mavis Nami, that when you're talking about poison, you don't mean something that's only poison, something like an animal would not normally eat. You mean bafrazda? There's a kind of grass, grass is normal for an animal to eat, but this particular kind of grass, this particular kind of herb, is poisonous. A frazda is the name of some kind of poisonous plant. Dehainu peiri, which then is exactly the same thing as peiri. So all it's just a difference of degree. In other words, basically, regular peiri, so would have to eat a huge amount of them to get sick. Yeah. Here, it eats a small amount of it, and already yes. But the bride says again, not necessarily drawing a distinction that in one case you'd be high, but in the other, and in the other case you'd be positive. Tosfos points out in that case, then the chiddush of mentioning some of it, if we look at it that way, is that when it comes to peiros, okay, what's going to happen most of the time? An animal overeats on peiros, fine, it'll get a stomach ache. It may be weak for a while, it may whatever, it's unlikely to be killed by it. Some of us, the animal is dead. Nevertheless, even in that case, you caught them with dinar, because Rav's rule that still applies. The owner of the peiros, or the afrazda, or whatever it is, still has the ability to argue and based in, okay, I put it there. But after all, it's not like I forced it, it's not like I forced the animal to eat it. At best, at worst, what I did is grumble. And grandma, your father. But it's not direct. Direct would be if you fed it to the animal. Indirect is you put it there and the animal ate it on its own.
Well, it's obviously going to eat it.
It may be obvious that it's going to, but the fact is, you only put the thing there that made it possible. You didn't actually eat it. So if you put poison in meat, to answer your question, yeah, that would be different. Well, not necessarily, according to what we're saying. According to the last thing we're saying, even if you put a frazda, you're still going to be positive. That's the point. So even if you put poison meat there, sure, an animal is going to be attracted to meat. But nonetheless, though, it doesn't have to eat every piece of meat it sees. So therefore, you still have the ability to argue that it was wrong. Okay, the Gemara says, Macy. Fine, I have a contradiction to this. You're telling me, then, this concept of hoyaloshalototol. That you have something over there which is dangerous to an animal, but nevertheless, you're not going to be chayav b'dinei adam because the animal didn't have to eat it. A braisa says, for isha shenichnas litzchein chitim et balabayis, if a woman goes into a balabayis' chotzer to grind wheat, which Tosfos points out, the point is that when you still, even though it's a normal thing to go there, the guy has a millstone that he rents out, that people come over there to grind, you still need to ask permission before coming in. If you come in without permission, it's considered shaloi b'rashus, like what we discussed in the Mishnah. So she comes in to grind wheat, shaloi b'rashus, without permission. Again, even though it's the kind of thing where everybody is always coming over there and grinding wheat and paying the guy, you still have to ask the rashus. And the owner's animal eats the wheat, potter, then the balabais is potter, because again, she came in shalajirishos. The imhuzka chayevet, and if the animal got damaged or injured by the wheat, then she's chayev. Now, we're assuming that huzka, again, means the animal ate the wheat, and wheat, you can feed animals wheat, but it's not really good for them. Maybe they can't digest gluten, I don't know what it is exactly, but whatever.
It has to be dried up.
Yeah, right. Well, you're taking it to grind. It is dried out, but whatever. I was curious about it. I was looking up a couple of websites on animal husbandry. Apparently, you can feed wheat to cattle, but you have to, in moderation, not too much of it. It's not digestible by them easily, or just too fast, whatever it is. Again, say that according to Rav, you should say, why should she be higher for the animal getting stomachache from the wheat?
Meaning
the animal didn't have to eat the wheat. Fine, I'm higher if the animal slipped on it. I agree with that. But if the animal ate it, why is that my problem? Again, I'm only a grummer. Amri, so the answer would be a different one. Listen, fine. What do you think the Braita is any stronger than the Mishnah? We said, when the Mishnah said Huzga, we explained that it didn't mean that it, we explained that your potter if it ate them. Same thing, the Braita also, Huzga doesn't necessarily have to mean that Huzga in the Mishnah, when we said that the owner of the Pater is high, it meant when the animal flipped on them, whereas you'd be potter if it ate them. Same thing in the Braita, Huzga Bahen doesn't have to mean that the animal ate it. It means it slipped on it, and then of course he's high. So now the question. I have a pile of it over there. Yeah, I guess it's me. Okay, so now the question becomes, it's Ka'ori Law, my Ka'ori Law. Fine, whoever brought this question into this medrash, what was he thinking in the first place? Obviously, you can explain the Braita the same way as the Mishnah. Why was he even bringing it in? On the law, because that Makshin can answer you. Vishlema must nissen katoniyim huzka behen. Because there's a slight difference. In the Mishnah, it used the expression that the animal was injured by them, which we can explain. It means that bahem literally means on them, so it slipped on them. The Braita just says if it was injured. It could just as well mean that it ate them. The Edoch, where the Tarsum, who said, but after all, you can't answer it that way, he would answer. He says that doesn't make a difference. That minor detail, huzka bahem versus huzka, is not significant. The Braita means exactly the same thing. So no proof against Rav.
Yeah, so don't know. So eating can mean the same thing as flipping?
No, it means that huzka can have a double meaning. It can mean slipping or it can mean eating. Slipping, you'd be chayav. Eating, you'd be potter.
And that's complicated.
Yeah, so that is the case. That's what we're saying. The Braita is saying exactly the same thing as the Mishnah, that which amounts to saying that huzka means only if it slipped, as opposed to if it ate them, then different rules.
Because he should have brought in there herself. She's only high if
the animal flips on it, not if it flips on it. Right. Yeah, that's what we're saying. Okay. Toshma, next, let's bring another proof. The Braisa says, Hifnis Shurl Hata Balabai Shulabishus. Somebody brings in his shur into a Balabai's sotter without permission. But Oho Chitin, and he ate wheat, so he clearly says that he ate it. Hitriz, and he had diarrhea. The animal got diarrhea. Umes, and he died, or whatever. Potter. So the owner of the wheat is potter. Being hifnis berushulus, but if he brought in the animal with him, no potter fakeh means that we're assuming at this point that potter means that the owner of the chater is potter for the animal having eaten the wheat. Yeah. Being hifnis berushulus, bala chater chayev. But if he brought it in berushulus, then the owner of the chater is chayev. Now, according to this logic, we should say that the animal didn't have to eat it. Why should I? You're saying that if he brought it in Birushus, Bala Chotu Chayev,
He gets permission to come and tell it, yes, but it doesn't mean that you can do what you want. Why should she eat stuff?
That's the point. When you're trying to bring a contradiction from a case where you brought it in with permission versus not, when the person brings the animal in, it means that he accepted responsibility for anything that's going to happen to the shur, even if the shur strangled itself, meaning that it was, again, sort of like what he said before about the pot, that you're accepting responsibility no matter what happens, even if the wind damages them. Similar idea over here. When you bring in your wheat, birushus, then we had it backwards. Remember, the stranger brought in his shur. We're saying that if he brings it in Bereshus, the owner of the chotzer is chayev for the shur having gotten diarrhea from eating the wheat. Why have a legislative title? Well, the answer is, again, like before, because when he brought it in Bereshus, Bereshus implies I will make sure nothing happens to your shur while it's on my breast. So that's different than shaloi Bereshus, which is what we've been talking about. So shaloi Bereshus, you have the ability to say have a legislative title, like Rav says. you can't get away with that. But yes, it's true, the animal didn't have to eat. Nevertheless, the fact is, I did accept responsibility for this. It boiled. So now they now the.
Cannot say both. In other words, let him in and lose self.
Right.
It's either one or the other.
Right. Hey,
one person, yeah, according to the other one, it's a, when he comes in, but he doesn't think of Christ at times.
Well, according to Rebbe, right. We're talking within the Rabbah. According to Rebbe, yeah, I must explicitly say, yeah. Right. Okay, so now the Yeshivalites had a related question. What happens when the Balabas has accepted responsibility, which, again, according to the Rabbanon, means responsibility for guarding the animal. If he accepted that he's going to guard the animal, according to the Rabbanon, all that means is he says, come on in with your animal. According to Rebbe, it would actually have to be said that I will watch it, yeah? Mahu, what's the difference? Do we say that he's only accepting responsibility for things of mine, that, for example, my shirt won't gore it or my dog won't bite it? Or does he mean to also say that he's going to guard it against external threats? When the Balabas says, come on in, let's say the Balabas says, come on in, I'll guard your shirt. Does that include, in other words, so now at this point, if the Balabas is sure gored this one, he'd be chayev, but let's say another sure wanders in off the street and gores him, maybe he'd be potter. Or maybe not. Maybe he's chayev no matter what.
If this sure does something, then he's chayev, and then another sure?
If another sure wanders in off the street and then gores it, maybe he'd be potter.
This one.
Okay, let's put names on. Let's put names on them so we don't get confused. Reuben has a chotzer. Shimon wants to bring his sure into it. So Reuben says, come on in, I'll walk your sure. Now, so okay, if Reuben's sure after that were to gore Shimon's sure, for sure Reuben is high. He accepted responsibility to prevent that from happening. If now Levi's sure comes in and gores Shimon's sure, is Reuben going to be high or not?
No,
do we say that he
gave permission only to Shimon?
But did he accept responsibility that no matter what happens, I will guard the sure or not? Now, okay, Tosfos points out, when you get down to it, Isn't that pretty much exactly the same thing that Rava said before? Rava said that he accepted responsibility even if the wind breaks the pot, even if the shur, even if the shur strangles itself. But not necessarily. So Tosfos brings in, well, Tosfos brings a couple of possibilities. One of them is that maybe in fact the Gemara wants to find out, okay, this answer that Rava gave before, is that a true answer? Is that in fact what he holds? Or was it just in the course of the discussion he brought that up to say you can't use that to disprove Rav, but not necessarily do I accept that as the actual fact in halacha. That's one answer. And also, similar to what you're saying, is that maybe you could argue it's different, that actually what it is, yeah, so actually Tosfos explains that Neturusa de Alma means a little bit different. It means that, fine, he may not expect that a third party sure is going to come into his chotzer, but you could, that's what it is. So Neturusa de Alma means fine. I'm accepting. It doesn't mean normal things that can be expected, but not necessarily third party animals. Yeah.
That's
point that way. Yeah. Which Tosfos points out, by the way, that if Shimon's shur now were to go out of the chotzer and get damaged, there's no question Reuben would be chayav, because once he said to Shimon, bring your shur into my chotzer, that means I'm taking responsibility for it from now on as long
anywhere.
As anywhere, yeah. Yeah.
That seems contradictory, because he says bring him here,
but then from now on until you come back, I'm responsible for it. So yeah.
Even if this shirt goes up.
So even if it goes out, so if it goes, yeah, I'm taking responsibility to follow it. Yeah. But on the other hand, maybe not necessarily am I taking responsibility in case another shur wanders into my house. Okay. So, Toshma, the Tonir of Yehuda
Bar... What was Tosfos saying?
That's what Tosfos is saying.
If the shur leaves
the chotzer, then Pshita, actually, Tosfos says, it's obvious that the Rekabal Alin and Tirus Afilam Alma, that he's for sure accepting responsibility even for third-party injuries. Kivin Shiyotza for Pachotza, because he knows that it went out, and he knows it's under his... He became a shur, effectively.
He accepted the shur only in his chotzer.
But he didn't say that. He
said, come in.
No, but that implies, you know, come in, and now you can leave, and you can leave, and now...
That's a shur.
Okay. Toshmas. Tony Rav Yehuda Bar Simon ben Nizokin de Vekarna. Rav Yehuda Bar Simon taught a braita that came from the Nizikin of Karna. Karna we've had a few times before. He was an Amora in the time of Rav and Shmuel. He put together a collection of braitas on Seder Nizikin that was called Nizikin de Vekarna. So the Rav Yehuda Bar Simon taught a braita from that collection that goes, Hichnis peros of Achasab alabai shalai berishus. If somebody brought in his peros in without permission, and a third party shor came in from the outside and ate them, potter, then he's potter. The braisa doesn't specify who's potter. That's what we're going to have to figure out. But if he brought him in berushus, then he's chayev. So man potter or man chayev. What when we say potter and chayev, who are we referring to? Lav potter baal chotzer, chayev baal chotzer. L'chora, aren't we talking about, we mean the baal chotzer, is potter or chayev, as the case may be. So, Shimon brought his peiros into Reuben's chotzer without rishus. So Levi's shor wanders in and eats them. Reuben's going to be potter because Shimon never asked him for permission. But if he's berishus, then he's chayev. Therefore, that if we explain it that way, then it shows he is accepting responsibility for what Levi's shor does in his chotzer as well. Yeah. Amri, so the answer no. Potter bala shor b'chayev bala shor. No, because the braisa can mean that the owner of the shor is potter versus chayev. Okay, the question is, Bigi Baal Asher, my Bereshus, and my Shalai Bereshus, Zika. Okay. Yeah, that the owner of the Shur, the owner of Levi, the owner of the Shur, is going to be Potter Chayev in the respective case.
The third party.
Okay, the question is, Bigi Baal Asher, we're talking about the Baal Asher being Chayev or Potter, my Bereshus, and my Shalai Bereshus, Zika. What kind of Bereshus and Shalai Bereshus? We're talking about whether Shimon brought in Tayrus, Bereshus or Shalai Bereshus. Lahoda Levi's animal just wandered in there. Nothing to do. So the answer, birshus, the difference is like this. If the animal came in with birshus, havila shein birshus and nizin, then what it amount, sorry, if Shimon brought the peiros in with Reuben's birshus, then when Levi's animal comes in, regardless, it doesn't matter whether Levi's animal had birshus or not. But the point is, Shimon, by having birshus, havila shein birshus and nizin, that amounts to now what you have when Levi eats that food. It's considered that it's shein, it's the nezik of shein, in the reshus of the nizik. The shein reshus and nizik chayevet. And that's when you're chayev for shein. Shaloi b'reshus, have you lost shein b'reshus and abim, whereas if Shimon Machila had brought in Keren, not Keren, shein.
I know, but I'm not.
Keren we'll get to soon. Right now we're talking about shein. An animal eating fruit is shein. So, whereas if Shimon brought in his peiros without reshus, havel shein b'reshus rabim, then when Levi's animal comes in and eats it, it's equivalent to shein b'reshus rabim, because Shimon had no right to put his food there in the first place. V'shein b'reshus rabim Torah, and we know that shein is part of b'reshus rabim. So that's the difference whether b'reshus or shalai b'reshus. So yes, we can say we're talking about whether Levi is chayev for his animal eating the peiros or not, but it depends on whether Shimon had reshus or not. You can't prove from that what Reuben liability would be. You could say either way Levi is potter. Tashma. Hichnis shur l'chatzah balabas shalai b'reshus. Come, let's prove another braisa says. If somebody brings in his shur into a balabas's potter without permission, u'bosh shur m'makam acher, and a shur comes from someplace else, so Levi's shur comes in and gores it, potter. Then hichnis b'reshus chayev. But if he brought it in b'reshus, that's what we have to figure out. Then hichnis b'reshus chayev, but if he brought it in b'reshus, then he's chayev. Again, we have to ask man potter or man chayev. Man potter or man chayev. Again, who are we talking about as potter and chayev respectively? Lav potter baal potter v'chayev baal potter. L'chore means baal potter, Reuben. And in that case, then we can prove that yes, if he came in b'reshus, it means that he accepted responsibility to prevent that I won't allow it to be gored by Levi's shur coming into my potter. And again, the answer is, like potter bala shur, b'chayev bala shur. No, what we're talking about is whether the owner of the shur is chayev or not. Okay, then again, if you have to ask. So the owner of the chotzer would be potter, in other words. The owner of the chotzer would be potter, because I only accepted responsibility that my shur won't gore your shur or whatever. I never accepted responsibility, maybe, that Lady's shur will come in and gore and then gore your shur. Okay, fine, according to that, then, if we're talking about Levi's responsibility, who cares whether Shimon came in b'reshus or not? The answer is, Amri, the answer, Halmani Rav Tarfon. You could say that this braisa that we just quoted goes only according to Rav Tarfon. The Omar, that he says, Mishuna Keren, b'chatzara mizik, Keren, unusual Keren, meaning when the animal is a tam and it gores, b'chatzara mizik, In the chotzer of the nizik shalom mishalom. That even though usually a tam would only pay half the nizik, but here it is. We said that one shor gored the other. This is the new case. This isn't Tohono Peres anymore. This is Tohono he wore in his shirt, and another shirt came in and wore it, Matkeren. But it's Birshusan, if he came in with permission, then it's considered Bahatsara Nezik. And Reb Tao can hold Bahatsara Nezik, even a Tam pays Nezik Shalom B'Shalom.
Even with permission of the Bahatsara.
Therefore, Birshus. So if Shimon came in with his Shur, Birshus, Habil Kevin Bahatsara Nezik, then what it amounts to is now you have this is considered Birshusan Nezik, because Shimon had the right to bring his animal in there. Umashalom Nezik Shalom. And therefore, when the Braisa says Chayev, doesn't mean he's Chayev as in he'd have to pay something. He'd have to pay something no matter what. But that he has to pay Nezik Shalom, not just Chatzi Nezik. Shaloi B'Rashus, Havi Lakerin B'Rashus Rabim, Veloi Mashalma Ela Chatzi Nezik. And then all he's paying is Chatzi Nezik. Potter, then again, doesn't mean completely Potter. Just means Chatzi Nezik, not Nezik Shalom.
Where are you?
So in the first Braisa, we could assume that Potter and Chayev meant truly potter or truly chayav. Here, we're talking about Karen, we can say it's talking about, if we say it's pointed up Karen, then we can say it's nezek shalom or chatzi nezek. But we don't, so we don't have a proof one way or the other. We could explain the braisa that way, or we could explain the braisa according to the Rabbanan. There's no difference. Karen is always chatzi nezek for a tam and muad, and nezek shalom for a muad, and that there, and if we went that way, then we could use the braisa to prove that in fact that Reuven the Baal HaChatzer was accepting responsibility for Levi's for the damages by Levi's shirt. But we can't prove that one way or the other from the braisa. So the Gemara continues with a couple of cases. How Yahihi Itza, there was a certain woman, the also the Mefa Bahu Besa, she came into a certain house to bake bread. Also, Barcha de Mori de Vesa, the goat that belonged to the owner of the house came, Ochla Lulisha, ate up the dough, Chavil, he got overheated from eating all that dough, Umis, and he died. And Chiva Rava Lashalomid Me Barcha. And Rava obligated this woman to pay for the value of the goat. So what do you mean, Lema Pligad Rab? Does that mean that Rava disagrees with what we had before that Rab said, Dalma Rab Habila Shalom Chesval? Bechora, according to Rab, she should be Potter.
Yeah. Yeah. If she had
permission. No, doesn't matter. That's what we're saying. Yeah. Amri, so the answer, no. Hachi Hashta, what are you comparing? Hossam Shalom B'Rashurus. Over there, the case was that the person came in Shalom B'Rashurus, Loi Kabbalah L'Nitirusa. So the owner did not accept, the owner did not accept any responsibility. But over here she came in with permission. Kabbalah and Tirusa. So Kibla, really, she accepted by coming in by
responsibility.
The difference is so Rashi says now what Kibla means that she accepted. Now Kibla it says on the side over here that Yosef Noyach the Grace Kibla. Because it's talking about the feminine. It's talking about that she accepted that she will make sure that his animal doesn't get injured by her dough. Now, the obvious question is, we said at the very beginning of the sugya, we said that that's not the case. When the potter comes in with his pot, he's not implicitly, by coming in with his pot, he's not implicitly accepting responsibility for the behemoth. Why is it different? Rashi says because the Gemara is going to continue, the Gemara is going to tell us at the end of the case over here that when she's kneading dough and baking bread, the Baal HaChatzer is not going to be there of necessity because of sneeze reasons, as we'll talk about a little bit. So it's different. When the kader comes in, when the potter comes in with his pot, he's there, the Baal HaBos is there. What? Therefore, he has no reason to be accepting any achrayus for the animal not getting injured by the pot.
Because
the Baal HaBos is there, he can watch his own animal.
But that's
what we're saying. Here, as the Gemara is going to continue, where when she's there, the Baal HaBos is not going to be there, then implicitly, when she came in, when she accepted that I'm going to come in and bake and knead my dough and bake my bread over here, that, in fact, that I'm going to make sure that nothing happens.
By leaving, the Baal HaBos expresses that she takes full responsibility to whatever happens.
Yeah.
Even though he lets her in.
Right. Yeah. Well, because the point is, because she knows that he has to leave for reasons of sneeze.
Yeah.
So she implicitly endorses that. Yeah.
But about washing the clothes, not to make sure that this little guy doesn't come to the kitchen.
Okay, I mean you have windows and doors and all that.
Okay.
The question is, why is it different than the case that we had before of the woman who came in to grind wheat? By the Balabas, we said that when the animal that belongs to the Balabas ate it, we said he's potter. And if the animal was injured by them, meaning slipped on them, then she's chayev. Time of Shalom B'Rashus. And why was she chayev for the animal slipping on it because she came in without permission. Implying she'd be potter if she came in virtuous. What's the difference? Here, the hoarder, she came in virtuous.
And she's chayev.
And we say she's chayev. The reason is Amri, because the answer, when it comes to grinding wheat, since she doesn't require tnius for it, in and of itself, grinding, she can stay fully covered with tniusic activity.
Yes, cover
her. No, not for grinding, she doesn't. For kneading, she does. Wait. Loy boy, misaki, my vasa, the chata napshayu. Therefore, the balachata does not have to leave the premises. Valedi de, rami nitsirosa. And therefore, the responsibility of guarding the animal still remains on him.
It's not tnius, even if she doesn't cover her up, to be safe with her.
He doesn't have to be in the same room as her. No, there can be petach basurach loshos rabim. There can be a door open. There can be showing room around, whatever. So the point is, he doesn't necessarily have to leave. Doesn't matter. We learned at the end of Kiddushin. Yes, if you have petach basurach loshos rabim, it's allowed. If you have a child who's old enough to but that's the word. There's always a way. In other words, when as long as she's dressed sneastic and remains dressed sneastic and grinding wheat is not inherently something that requires her to be in an unsneastic state, then he's able to be around the chaser. He doesn't have to be in the same room as her, but he's able to be around the chaser and look after him.
You
have to roll up your sleeves. When it comes to not necessarily. You may roll it up beyond your elbow as well. So avala mefa, when it comes to baking, kneading and baking, kibin de boya hi tniyosa, since she requires tniyos, because she has to uncover her arms, mavasa de chata masaki napshayu, therefore the owner of the chata has to remove himself from the premises.
Mavasa
means the owner. Mavasa means the owner.
If he could be the other master now, if a door open, what's the difference?
Okay. Masaki means smaller than a door open.
Yeah.
You have to leave there.
You can still have the door up and see her.
Point to this, we don't have to leave the house. Leave the room.
But that's the point. In other words, if she's grinding, he can actually be there in the same room. All you need is pass up a door. You have an open door.
Right.
Here, he can't be in the same room.
Therefore,
the responsibility for guarding the animal falls on her. And therefore, she didn't guard it, and she ended up eating the dough, then yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay. Mishnah says
that's the
halacha. Yes, that's the halacha that makes that distinction. That if the balachoter has to be around, can't be around, then she's responsible. If he can be around, then he's responsible. Okay. Kichnis shor lachatzar balabayis. We mentioned another case where somebody brought in his shor into somebody else into the balabos's chatzar, and again we have the case where the balabos's shor gored him or the balabos's dog bit him. And by the way, the Tiferes Yisrael points out why does the Mishnah have to mention both that the shor bit him or that the shor gored him or the dog bit him? Because the chiddush is we learned at the end of the previous parak, and we're going to learn more extensively later on in the Masechta, that you're not allowed to have a dangerous dog around your house in the first place. So therefore, l'chora, if the dog bit it, the Baal HaShor should be able to argue, okay, yes, I brought in my shur without the shur, that was careless of me. What are you doing having a dog around that bit it? Nevertheless,
the
Baal HaShor, yeah. Nevertheless,
the dog is there to guard.
Yeah, but no. Whatever the point is, that's it, yeah.
Just to guard, not anything
but damage. But guarding made, whatever the point is, the Baal HaShor, the Baal HaShor can still say, fine, but the fact is you brought your shur in without permission, and therefore I have no responsibility for anything that happened. So, Amar Rabba, a related case. Hichnis shor l'chatzar balabayis shalei birshus. Suppose somebody brings a shor into a balabos's chatzar without permission. V'chafav abodes shichin amayris. And while the shor is in there, they're digging out ditches and holes in the ground.
The shor.
Chayev v'nisk, bala shor chayev v'nisk chatzar. So now the owner of the shor is going to be responsible to repay the damage that was done to the chatzar.
He came
shalei birshus. However, the chiddush is the Baal HaChatzar chayev v'nizkei haber. The important point is the Baal HaChatzar is going to be responsible for the nezek that's caused by that bur. Meaning, so now Rashi points out. Hold on. If it remains in his reshus, then obviously not. A person's allowed to have a bur in their chatzar. The point is Rashi says im hifker reshusay. If he was mafkir, that reshus afterwards, then what you have is a bur. He himself didn't create the bur. That's the chiddush. Not only he himself didn't create it, no human being created it. An animal created it. So wait, that's the point. Now, even though it is true that we learn in a Braisa, as we're going to learn later on in a few blocks when we start getting into all the dinim of bur, we learn in a Braisa over there that when the pasuk says kiyichre ish bur v'lo shur bur, that you chayev if a person digs a bur, not if a shur digs a bur. So in this case, you would think maybe he should be potter. Hacha, but over here, kiven the isle la'eich l'maluye, since he had the ability to fill it in. And he did not fill it in. He put a cover on it. Commander Kalya Dummy, it's the equivalent of as if he dug it, and therefore he will be chayav.
It
is
by not covering it.
By not covering it. Well, or that's by being mafkir the area, yeah.
And if he had not mafkir,
if he had not been mafkir, then his property, he's not chayav for anything that happens on his property.
The fact that it makes it worse.
Yeah, that's the point, yeah.
Makes it liable.
Makes him liable, yeah.
Without that, he wouldn't be liable.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. Rava says another din. By the way, Tosis brings up the point. Based on this logic, actually, Lav Davka, we should say that even if a shur dug the bur. Tosis argues Lachoda, then the same thing would apply. If somebody else comes into your chotzer and digs a bur, and again afterwards your master the area, then again by the same logic, you it would seem that you should be chayav. Tosis leaves it the tzorach you. It's questionable whether that's in fact the case. The Ramban, I think, actually draws a distinction that maybe when a person was a baal day and dug it, then maybe he's the one responsible over here. It's a shur that doesn't have any daft, dug it, so maybe that's different.
And if it's a shur muad?
Doesn't matter. There's no muad as far as digging holes. And it's more to begin with for that, I guess.
If
somebody brings in his shur to a balabas's chotzer without permission, the hizikas balabayis, and that shur injures the balabas, oy balabayis huzak boy, or the balabas was injured by it, for example, he tripped on it, chayim, then the owner of that shur is chayim. On the other hand, rovat's potter, but rovat, now rovat usually means it's laid down. And he's potter. So what are the obvious question? What do you mean? From the rovat's potter. Why should he be potter? Because the animal lay down. Lachura, that sounds like it means that, for example, if it lay down and broke Kalim, let's say. So why should the fact that it lay down make any difference?
Which word means to rub against the wall?
That's Neschatek. Amar Papa, my Ravat Shehubitz Glolim. No, Ravat does not mean that it lay down. Ravat, the Shurish Ravat means laying down. But it doesn't. Ravat would be an active, meaning that it lay itself down. What we're saying is Ravat means Hubitz, that it caused something else to lie on the ground. Meaning it defecated, it went to the bathroom over there. So here with glolim, it produced glolim, it produced excrement, which lay on the ground, and then the balabas afterwards, his clothes got dirty from it. So then we're saying that the owner of the shirt is potter. It had a glolim burn. Now why is that? Because that excrement is considered like, effectively, it's a burn. Once it's on the ground over there, once it's on the ground over there, then it becomes a burr. Rashi points out, by the way, that Rashi points out that again we have to be talking about that it doesn't even have to be that he was maskir, whether he was maskir or not, or actually whether he was maskir or not. Actually, we're going to talk about in a second in the Gemara. But he has the responsibility. His animal produced it. He should be chayav to remove it. So it is a burr. He is responsible for a burr. However, we never find that you're chayav for a burr damaging kalim, as we will learn later on. No, glolim is considered a burr.
No.
Kalim, shabalabayas, the owner's clothes got dirty in it. That's kalim.
Oh, yeah.
So you're potter. So you're potter. So for, yeah. So even if it's in the balabas's property, right.
Can we talk about the killing that fall in the bar?
But this is the same, it amounts to the same thing, though. A bird doesn't necessarily have to be a pit in the ground. We learned all the way back to the beginning of the Masechta that a toldo bird is anything that you can trip and fall over or whatever. It's here. This thing, these glolim are considered a bird. But a bird, you potter for Kalim. So Rashi draws the distinction. Rashi draws the distinction over here between when your shur dug a burr, fine. Your shur dug it without you being involved. You can't really do anything about it afterwards. The burr is never yours in the first place. Whereas when a shur excretes or any animal excretes, fine. But you at that moment it's yours until you master it, and therefore you have a responsibility to get rid of it. So that actually draws that distinction. Tosfos discusses at some length about whether about the validity of that distinction or other possibilities over here. There's a different explanation. Some Rishonim draw a distinction between whether the original bow was created by an onus or not. You're sure digging in the ground, that's sort of an onus. You couldn't have helped it. A shur producing glolim is not so much an onus. You know and a shur is constantly going to produce them, and therefore you're responsible to clean them up. Okay, the question is, Honichel Shmuel? Fine, that works out nicely according to Shmuel. Dama kolta kola burgu. Shmuel says any kind of hazard in Rosh Hashanah is considered a bur, whether you were masculine or not, whether you still own it or not. El Rav Damad Masculine Aitul Neima. What about according to Rav that until you masculine, it's not that and until you masculine, it's not considered a bur. It's considered no. Fakert, if you're not masculine, then it's considered Adam. Because the fact that you could have removed it, you put something down over there and didn't remove it, that makes it. We learned about this before. We learned about this before, and then we're going to learn more about it later on in the parak. According to Rav's way of looking at it, as long as you weren't masquerade, it's a tool of Adam. You placed it there. You caused it to remain there, or whatever. If you're masquerade, then it becomes a bird. So why over here are we saying you potter for the guy's clothes getting dirty by then? It's told of Adam and Yechai for that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Why? The answer is Amri, because the answer is Stam Golem Akuri Maskur. Because you can generally assume that your Maskur excrement right away. Mainly if it lands in your property, okay, if you use it to fertilize or whatever. But if it's someplace else, it's an Ishus Adavim or somebody else's Chasa or whatever, you're not going to bother with it. We assume you're going to be Maskur, and therefore it does right away become a birth.
Do you have to do it?
It's automatic. It's an assumption. Again, a case, somebody comes into a balabas's chotzer without permission, the hizik as balabayis, and he injured the balabayis, a balabayis huzak boy, or the balabas was injured by him. The Rashi, hizik means that he injured him with his hand, or he injured him, Rashi says it doesn't matter whether he had intention or not, but the point is he did something, intentionally or not, to injure the balabayis. Huzek would be, let's say, he's standing where he is, and the balabas comes over and trips over him. That's huzek. He didn't actually do anything, but the balabas tripped over him, let's say. So he's chayav. The guy who came in, shalai b'rishus, is chayav for the injury to the balabas. He's zik balabayas potter, where the balabayas, if he injured him, is going to be potter. Amar apapa, loy amoran el loy have a yodave. So the Papa says that only applies if he didn't know of him. Abel have a yodabe, he's zikr balabai eschai. Yodabe. So wait, Rashi explains that yodabe means exactly what it sounds like. He's aware that the guy is there. So if he's not aware that he's there, and he accidentally, let's say, you know, he walks into him and knocks him down and hurts him, he'd be positive. Because that could, according to that way of looking at it, it would be a real onus. He didn't even know the guy was there. Yes, we learned before that Adam Mu'ad La'olam, but not when it's a complete onus that he could have never been expected to know. And we had a case over there, for example, that we brought from the Yerushalmi, that, for example, somebody's sleeping, and during the while the person is sleeping, somebody puts Kalim next to him, and during the night he wakes them. That is possible, because he had no way of knowing they're there. Abel have a yodabe, but if the owner knew that he was there, he's zikir balabayis chayim. Then if the balabayis injures him, he is chayim. My time, Mishum to Amalei, because he can tell him, Nihidi Islaf Roshus Alav Kofi. Fine, I agree you have permission to throw me out of your chotzer. Lazuki, Laslaf Roshusa. However, you don't have permission to injure me. The Rambam learns differently, at least the way the Lacha Mishnah explains the Rambam. The Lacha Mishnah explains what the Rambam says on this subject a little bit differently. That Yodabe, or Loi have a Yodabe, means whether he had Kavana to cause him hazard or not. If he had Kavana, he'd be Chayiv. If he didn't have Kavana, he'd be Potter. But all the time, when the Gemara says, so Rava and Rapapa are both going according to their respective shittas, the Amar Rava became Rapapa, because we find elsewhere that Rava, or some say Rapapa, said that Shneim Dirshus, if you have two people who have permission to be there, for example, Rashi says in Rosh Hashanah, or it's a chotzer that belongs to both of them, and gave him permission, or both of them are in a place where neither of them has permission to be acting the way they do. And Rashi gives the example which we learned earlier in the Masechta, we learned in the third paragraph. For example, you have two people running down the street. not on Erev Shabbos. We said Erev Shabbos is an exception, but normally you have no business running down the street. Hizik uzeh zechayav, and if they injure each other, then they're chayav. Who's uzeh uzeh turin? If they are injured by each other, so one, for example, runs that trips over the other, then he'd be puzzled.
Hiziku seems to be
with it. So Rashi explains Hiziku means doesn't matter intent. Hiziku means that you actually did something. For example, you swung your arm and then hit the guy in the nose, regardless whether you intended to hit him or not. But you actually know. Well, yeah. But the point is that both of them have permission to be there, or both of them don't have permission to be there, as the case may be.
Right.
So Rashi learns that Hiziku and Huzku. Hiziku means, for example, you swung your fist and hit the guy in the nose. Let's say. As opposed to Huzku would be, let's say, the guy tripped over you. So you didn't actually do anything similar to what we said before. There are other Rishonim who learn differently that Hiziku means that you meant to cause Hezek, whereas Huzku means that it happened accidentally. Anyway, actually Tosfos learns that way. Yeah. Okay, so if they injured each other, again, Rashi says means via Dayim with their hands, let's say, then they're Chayiv Huzku. Zeb Zeb turn. But if one is damaged by the other, then they're Potter. Now, time of the Shneim B'Rishusa, Shneim Shalei B'Rishusa. Why are we saying that both of them are Chayiv or Potter, as the case may be? Because both of them are on the same level. They're both there B'Rishusa, or they're both there Shalei B'Rishusa. Avol Echad B'Rishusa Ve'Echad Shalei B'Rishusa. But the implication is one of them had permission to be there and the other one not. So, for example, if one person's Chaser and the other one came in without permission, then B'Rishusa Potter, Shalei B'Rishusa Chayiv. Then the one who's there B'Rishusa is Potter for any injuries, even if he caused injuries via dying. To the other guy, he'd be potter. The one who's there, shalei b'rishus, will be chayav. Now, so that fits with what we were just saying. That as long as the Bala Bas didn't know that the other guy was there, even he injured him via dying, he actually swung his fist and hit the guy. He'll still be potter because he didn't even know he was there.
It
doesn't matter. That's what we just said. If you know he's there, yes, you have permission to throw him out. You don't have permission to be mad at him. So therefore, you would be chayav for that. But Mishnah said, "Nafal abur behivish meim of chayev." We said that if the animal fell into a burr and stunk up the water and made the water unusable, then he's chayev. Amar Rava, "Lo shanu ala shehivish b'shas nefilo." This only applies if the animal dirtied or damaged or whatever, otherwise made the water unusable when it actually fell, which there is directly called the hezek. Avala acha nefilo potter, but if it did it at some point after it fell, then it would be potter. My time, I have a sure bird or mayim kalim, because then effectively what you have is the sure is sort of in that sense like an inanimate object. It's considered a bird. You can't consider it a tolda of any of the other nizikin anymore. At that point, it becomes a bird. Or mayim kalim, therefore the water is considered the equivalent of kalim, because again, anything inanimate is considered like kalim. V'loy matzinu bird shechiyed by a kalim. And again, you pop there for kalim that are damaged by a bird. Again, the question becomes, Hanichel Shmuel Damakol Takala Baruhu. Fine, that works out according to Shmuel that any hazard is considered bur, regardless whether you're maskur or not. El Rav Dama de maskur la maikul mema. What about according to Rav that says that only if you're maskur it? Before, when we said glolim, okay, you could say glolim, you're mistama maskur. The shirt fell into a bur, you're probably not maskur. The carcass is probably worth something. Ella itma hochi itma. So no, we can't say that. Rather, we have to say the case differently. Amar Rava, lo shanu ela shehivish migufa. No, rather the distinction is if the animal itself, the animal's actual body, made the water disgusting. Sure. So Rashi mentions, for example, the animal was dirty before it fell in.
So how else could it be?
Aval hivish merecha potter. But if the water became unusable because of the smell, for example, the animal died in there, and eventually it stunk up the water, potter. My time, a groma ba'amahu, because then it's only a case of groma, the fact that the owner of the shur didn't schlep out his shur. Well, groma ba'amahu, loy mechayev, and you're not chayev for groma. So, I think there's other rishonim. I think the Raivet, for example, learns gufa and reicha a little bit differently, that gufa you can even include that right away when the animal wasn't necessarily dirty, but right away it fell in, for example, and then, you know, the water already became unusable because of the animal. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Whereas again, reicha would be that just the animal stinks. Maybe even it's alive, but it's not as direct a thing as dirt or whatever that's on it.
It's not far away.
But there's still a difference.